May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be aligned with your love, O God, our strength, our courage, and our freedom. Amen. Please be seated. Good morning. And happy Mother's Day. I'm so moved by the prayer that you prayed for me and for my church. What a generous offering of worship. Thank you very much. I'm deeply, deeply grateful to be here to Professor Jonathan Walton, my newest best friend, for extending this generous invitation to be with you here. He's such a brilliant beacon of hope in his efforts to establish a lighthouse of learning and prophetic proclamation for this esteemed institution of learning and in turn for our nation and for the world. Dr. King lamented that the church too often served as taillights rather than headlights in the moral issues of the day. Professor Walton is a headlight person in mind and heart and leadership, and I'm honored to know you and call you my friend. And I'm also indebted to Nat Katz, beloved and effective Epps fellow here and member of the church I serve in Pasadena, where Nat is successfully and intelligently moving through our discernment process to become an Episcopal priest. He will be leaving you all to join us at All Saints next month. In a spiritual and metaphorical way, I've come to claim him and take him home. And while you mourn and miss his leave-taking here, please be assured that we'll take care of him there with gratitude and joy. I'm here with a heart full of both inspiration and heartbreak. 3 days ago, I visited with parents, doctors, and townspeople of Newtown, Connecticut, and then Friday night spent some meditative prayer time at the Boston Marathon bombing site. In preparation for the journey to Newtown, I learned many things from leaders of our host organization, Sandy Hook Promise. Those 20 first graders and 6 educators were mercilessly mowed down at Sandy Hook Elementary School by 154 bullets sprayed out of an assault weapon in less than 5 minutes. A massacre made possible with such brutal efficiency because we in America allow assault weapons designed to kill people on the battlefield to be purchased by civilian killers. And we allow high-capacity magazines holding 30 rounds of ammunition. Ironically, in many states, hunters cannot carry more than 5 to 7 bullets because of fair game laws, which give the hunted animal a fair chance to run. And we don't apply the same compassion to our children. There are many other reports I could share about the sophisticated division of labor in Newtown, addressing everything from changing gun policy to learning about mental health and brain health issues, and on and on. I could tell you about how these parents are doing this work, even while being grief-stricken, and they have to come home from Washington, D.C., or another capital of a state and have to go to bed for a week just to recover because of their psychological woundedness. But on this Mother's Day, a day first envisioned by Julia Ward Howe, calling for a Mother's Day for Peace, for women to join in support of disarmament, I can assure you that the mothers of Sandy Hook will not let this nation forget and will, with our solidarity, lead you and me to another tipping point in justice and peace, in bending that long arc of the universe toward justice. And here in Boston, I knew of this morning's observance of the Boston Mother's Day Walk for Peace for families who've lost their children to violence. The walk here has become a place for families and friends to feel support and love with thousands of others who pledge their commitment to peace. Some of us have been concerned about the racism that is hidden in so much attention being paid to Sandy Hook, and at the same time we have 34 people killed every day by gun violence in America. I was so assured that this one mother had such an admirable racial and class critique of the attention given to her child and others by the media, and not to the mothers of the 34 people who die daily. I really think that if we join these mothers, whether they're suburban or urban mothers, that we can give license for President Obama to extend his alliterative list of place names where bigotry and violence have been decisively changed in America. Seneca Falls, Selma, Stonewall. Now we can one day have Sandy Hook added to it. That's what I pledge myself to every time I pray in worship. I don't want there to be another massacre. And then I become or feign shock and shame because I somehow lapsed into lassitude and amnesia-fed apathy. And I hope you will do so too. And I must say, I had a little holy pride this morning when I read from my hometown newspaper, just a little town, Pasadena, of 187,000 people, that we had a gun buyback program yesterday, to which the people of All Saints had made contributions along with other neighborhood churches and the police, and we people turned in 135 guns yesterday, including an AK-47 assault rifle, an SKS assault rifle, I don't even know what these things are, and a sniper rifle with a scope, and they're off the streets today. One mother told me that sometime after her daughter was killed in Sandy Hook, a quotation had set itself up as a mantra inside her mind. The quotation is this: "In the depth of winter, I finally learned that within me there lay an invincible summer." Her name is Nelba Marquez Green. I got to talk with her the other day. She said that one day prior to the carnage at Sandy Hook, she was a bit anxious, and her daughter Anna, who just a few days later would be murdered, turned to her and said, "Mom, don't let them suck your fun circuits dry." She said, "We are grieving, but we're not going to let this suck our fun circuits dry. Because I know that in the depth of winter, there lay within me an invincible summer." That quotation is from Albert Camus, who himself was torn by violence and war. And in the depths of despair, he made a journey to his home in Algeria, where his mind came alive to the invincible summer that lay within him. And that is within each one of us. I have to tell you the story. There was a suicide last week of a 13-year-old boy in town. And the rector of the Episcopal Church where he worshipped said to all of the high schoolers who came, "I want you all to think of three people in your life who are your personal first responders. And whenever life gets dark for you, call on all three of them. And let them tell you that within you there is an invincible summer. You are loved beyond measure. You are loved beyond imaginings. Don't go through life without your personal first responders. I think it's a good piece of advice for everyone in this room. First responders have become a kind of iconic public servant for us in America since 9/11. And we all need to keep our PFRs in mind. Final part of my report from Newtown, then I'll finish up here. Another mother, Francine Wheeler, was interviewed by Bill Moyers two Friday nights ago, just talking about what happened with the vote where our Senate voted down a bill for background checks when 90% of Americans want background checks. And he asked her how she felt about it, and she said, "You know, I already had a gut feeling that the vote was not going to pass that day, but I do have hope. And I heard my son Ben's voice that day, and he said to me, 'Don't worry, Mama, there is hope and love here. Don't feel discouraged.' And I'm not going to speak for any other parent, but for me, I didn't really lose hope that way that day. I felt like it was a good step." Moyer said, "So you're not finished with this?" And she said, "Our hearts are broken. Our spirit is not." One of the dads courageously said in the Rose Garden, "We're not going because where am I going to go? I have to live without my 6-year-old here anymore for as long as I'm on earth. So what am I going to do? I have to still parent my son, who's now dead. I have to still honor him. I still have to be there for him." That's what you and I are called to do. To honor people who've passed on. I love the fact that in our first reading this morning, it focuses on St. Paul interrupting the exploitation of children and how we are called to care for our children. I have a friend named Father Greg Boyle, who's a Jesuit priest in Los Angeles. He's the head of the most successful gang intervention program in America. And he says, "No hopeful kid joins a gang." My Muslim friends in L.A. are wanting to connect with Father Boyle. We're having a meeting next week. And what they want to explore is the phenomenon of the radicalization of young Muslim men. They want to know if there are patterns between the radicalization of young Muslim men and young men going into gangs. They're asking, could it be that no hopeful Muslim youth can be radicalized? One of the things that our nation must undergo if we're to have any moral leadership in the world is to learn how to care for one another and to care for our kids, understanding that we are one. Jesus prayed in the 17th chapter of John today that we may all be one. I don't think Jesus was praying that we would become one, but that we would recognize that we are already one. Mother Teresa said, "Everything that is wrong with us boils down to the fact that we have forgotten that we belong to one another." We must remember that we belong to one another and that we are one. It took place at our creation. We really were created, as Dr. King said, interrelated, interwoven from the beginning. And what needs to happen is for us to realize that and to act on that so that we know and feel it and know it, that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. From my perch as an American citizen, I think that the fundamental debate going on in the world today is the debate between the paradigm of the separate self of Ayn Rand and the paradigm of the interrelated, interdependent self of Martin Luther King Jr. If you live by the paradigm of the separate self, then you can easily embrace the notion of disposability. Since those other people are not like me, they are really separate from me, and I can dispose of them. I can choose not to expand health care to my state, because poor folks are disposable. I can racialize Islam. I can discriminate against them because they're not like me. They're separate from me and they're disposable. I can call certain immigrants illegal instead of without documents because they're really separate from me and they are disposable. Poor kids are separate from me. And so I can create inequality in public schools. But Dr. King echoes Jesus' prayer that we realize our oneness. Jesus wants us to realize our oneness. When Dr. King wrote, we are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. Dostoevsky says, love all God's creation, the whole and every grain of sand in it. Love every leaf, every ray of God's light. Love the animals, love the plants, love everything. If you love everything, you will perceive the divine mystery in things. And once you perceive it, you will begin to understand it better every day. And you will come at last to love the whole world with an all-embracing love. Things flow and are indirectly linked together. And if you push here, something will move at the other end of the world. If you strike here, something somewhere will wince. If you sin here, something somewhere will suffer. When you and I enter and embrace the paradigm of interwovenness of all creation, then our ethic becomes one of solidarity. We're in solidarity with everyone who suffers. Well, in the liturgical calendar by which I live my life, on this past Thursday, Jesus ascended into heaven, which meant kind of two things. Jesus is off the scene physically in the resurrection appearances, and Jesus is now everywhere. In preparation for next Sunday, Pentecost, when the Spirit comes down and tells us that this stuff, salvation and God and holiness and sacredness, is universal. It's not just for us Christians. God is not a Christian. And during this moment, I think we're called to understand that Jesus never wanted us to worship Him. Jesus was interested in us following Him. He said, greater things than I've done, you will do. You and I are called to do greater things than even Jesus. I'm not interested in having Jesus up on a pedestal. I'm interested in Jesus inspiring our hearts and minds so that we can live in the paradigm of interrelatedness and interwovenness with the ethic of solidarity, so that all children are our children and we are mothers to them all. And we're called to give every one of them hope, whether they're in our tribe or not. And if we do all that, we can turn the human race into the human family. Amen.